It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Hello there and good morning. This is Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. I'm Jacob Harrison.
We have breaking news.
Do we have breaking news?
That's Dejon Hughes. Darvin Ham just got fired. Like right now.
Oh, yeah, the Los Angeles Lakers head coach. I saw that just a minute ago.
Wow. You can continue.
Yeah, LeBron not too happy about losing, so he's just clearing house before he even decides if he's going to come back or not, right? Isn't he like the GM?
No.
I mean, no. Everybody knows. He's practically the GM of the Lakers.
Genie bus, dude.
No. Ain't nobody buying that.
We'll see.
From one nonsense thing to another, May the 4th be with you. Happy May 4th, Star Wars Day. DJ, you Star Wars dude at all?
I am, yeah. Actually.
Prequels, originals.
I have a lacrosse memory coming up where my stick was shining, so I reference Star Wars and the Force, so it comes up every May 4th.
So a lightsaber stick is what you're saying?
Yeah. It did. I was like... Something about my stick not shining as bright as my future or something. May the force be with you.
Oh my, that's excellent. That's great.
Yeah, it was something like so cliche, clean, like, oh, cringy.
Well, hope you all have a great May the 4th. If you binge watched Star Wars or anything like that, have some fun.
And Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo tomorrow. Yeah.
Sunday.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm speaking tomorrow in terms of as if we're on the air.
I got to get used to the recording. Not good.
But yeah, be responsible. Cinco de Mayo. Go out and have a good time. I guess I can't mention that. That's a rocker thing. If you listen to me on Saturdays on the rocker, you know, there you go. You'll get that one. We're going to start with something that we usually don't start with. We usually wait till a little bit later to bring up the Tigers, simply because DJ and I are just not really baseball guys, but we do want to help keep you informed and learn and, you know, bring our opinions to the table. We know you guys care about the Tigers and we want to talk about what you guys care about and do our best to be entertaining in the process. The Tigers are playing pretty damn well. All things considered, since last we talked, 4-2, winning both their series, winning both home series against Kansas City and St. Louis. Now, that being said, start of that run, 8-0 loss, and we'll get into that here in just a little bit because there's a gnawing trend. Despite how good the pitching is for the Tigers, there's a gnawing trend with a certain pitcher. And if you're a passionate fan, you probably already recognize that trend. But nonetheless, you look around the league and the coming out party and really the belief in what's going on with the Tigers is starting to permeate a little bit. I was reading a Jeff Passan article this morning, kind of just a state of baseball kind of article he put out on ESPN. He talks about how umpires are affecting the game because that's really heavy in the news, the way the new rules are operating and if it's helping or hurting the game. And he was mentioning how, you know, which surprise team is for real. And one of the teams that he brought up is Detroit. And it's because of the pitching, the good bullpen that Detroit has and everything they've got going for them. Since we last talked, the batting averages have gotten a bit better, still very much in the bottom third of the league. But nonetheless, I mean, Detroit, two games back from the Guardians. Guardians slipped up at least once I saw against, the Braves because I had an awful picks last week. But, Detroit, man, they're kind of putting it together, starting to make believers out of everybody slowly, kind of similar to what the Red Wings did last year, which is kind of why I've been a little bit hesitant to just fully embrace it. But nonetheless, the biggest question mark is the thing they've answered. They're pretty good at pitching because Jake Flaherty and Skubal's incredible. They're really boosting this team to a place where they can overcome poor batting until that kind of catches up, because that was their strength last year.
Yeah, I mean, if the batting catches up, people should really be concerned, because the fact that they're hanging around only two game back from the AL Central crown, a half game back from being in second, they're above 500, so they're going to be competing. Obviously, if all of this stays where, you know, along this trail is what I'm speaking, and they're going to be, you know, competing for a playoff spot. So the bats just got to wake up. That's the biggest thing, is do what you have to do, hitting coach. You know, I'm sure you're watching tons of film, and I'm sure you're trying to correct swings and, you know, do what you have to. But we got to find a way to wake the bats up. Those bats get up, and you see a lot more of these 11-6 wins and 4-1 wins rather than these 8-0 losses, 7-5 losses. And then you're looking at winning the AL Central. One of my friends actually predicted that the Tigers would win the AL Central, and I kind of was like, dude, I would love it, but, like, I think you're bugging a little bit. And now, like, I kind of got to eat those words. But, and another concerning note, the Tigers got one, or they won the series over the Twins. Mm. But after that last game that they beat the Twins haven't lost. They're on a 10-game win streak, and they're one game or half a game behind the Tigers.
Yeah.
So they're right in the thick of it. The only team that no one has to worry about in the AL Central is the Chicago White Sox.
And they're... Oh, boy, they're bad.
They're bad, bad. Bad, bad.
Bad, bad, bad.
So, like, they're in no concern of anyone, but everybody else is
very strong,
thugging it right now. So it's like, you got to stay the course. And what's, like, kind of almost a downfall is if – I got to imagine the Tigers are looking at the standings and such right now. Like, if our bats were awake, we're leading the AL Central.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to imagine that's bugging them a little bit and is kind of – maybe going to be a motivator, like, hey, we got to get a full funnel approach going at this thing. If our fielding and pitching stays where it is and we can bring the bats even up another 5 to 10% better than what they are now, we're going to be killing it.
You bring up the Twins and you know, for some reason they have a very similar logo to Cincinnati. So while you're talking, I kind of was looking at Cincinnati, who's ranked above the Twins and the Tigers in ESPN's latest power rankings. And they were kind of discussing how, the Reds aren't particularly good batting, yet they still rank in the top 10 in runs. So there's a way to get around what the Tigers are doing. And that's a team that's only a handful of spots ahead of them in the power rankings and is closer to 500 than the Tigers are. But you mentioned it, with the strength of the AL Central, I didn't just misspeak, did I? Okay. AL Central. With the strength of the league or the division, whatever, you stack those series wins, that's going to do you some good, but also winning elsewhere, because what are we at now? We're four straight series wins for the Tigers, and that's all you can ask for. You're winning 2 out of 3 games. You're right on schedule. That being said, we're coming up on 2 prove-it series, both on the road at New York with the Yankees and at Cleveland, and this is where I want to get into the situation. Okay, so Skubal is going to start one of those games. Flaherty is going to start one of those games. Reese Olson, who is 0-4, 3.18 ERA, is going to start 2 of those games. He's going to start the first game in the series against New York and then start the last game of the series against Cleveland. That is concerning. Now, it's not the end of the world, because you can afford to drop one or these games in each series, as they've done the past 3 or 4 series. They haven't swept anybody, and I don't think they're necessarily expected to, but there's an outlier. When we're talking about a team that has good pitching, and you've got a guy who has started the season this slow, and the bats aren't hot, and now you're playing these 2 prove-it series where a lot of eyes are going to be on you and everybody wants to see if you're for real. You got to play 2 strong teams, especially one in your division. That's a little concerning to me.
I'm cool with it. You got to let them feel it out. And you want them to do that now. And it's also like a rotational basis thing. So, like,
yeah,
you can drop some games earlier in the season. You can allow kind of things to be slow here in the earlier part of the season. So, yeah, give them a few extra games, especially – this Yankee series, I maybe would have pitched him twice, but it's like impossible to do that, you know? So, but yeah, giving him a couple games or in these early series, not a bad idea. And you kind of help him get out of that groove by giving him more time to pitch, because you don't want him to be pitching this way in July or August.
Yeah.
You want him to get out of that groove as soon as possible.
I mean, they're not deviating away from the set rotation. Don't get me wrong. It's still Olsen, Mize, Skubal, Flaherty, Maeda. I'm sorry. There's no change in that. It's just a little, I don't know. When you look at those six games all down the line, and you see the last game of the series against New York, you've got your ace out there, and you could potentially take that series because of it. And then with Cleveland, which is a little bit more important of a game, I know we're in May, but a little bit more important of a series, Flaherty takes the first one, and then after that, it's a little bit more of a question mark, and you really want to take the series and start gaining ground on Cleveland. You know, you win two of those games, you are right there neck and neck for the lead in the AL Central. So it's needed. You know, it's just how the schedule fell. But I did want to just bring up, you know, as good of a bullpen situation as the Tigers have, as good of a pitching staff as the Tigers have, it's not elite. Skubal is kind of bringing it to that stage, and Flaherty is playing the best ball he's played in almost half a decade. But you've still got a weakness there that you do have to kind of, you know, just pay some attention to, and don't lose sight of that. You're not, you know, far from unstoppable. But we'll pause there, take a break. We'll continue to talk about the Tigers all summer long. But next we're going to kind of break down what happened in the rest of the NFL draft. We were only able to talk about the first round last week. The Lions had a fun first round. We can also potentially talk about some of the landing spots for some of the Michigan Wolverines. We'll also have some Wolverines discussion to be had a little bit later as well here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK. All right, we're back here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. Going to break down the rest of the 2024 NFL Draft, starting with the Detroit Lions. We sang the praises of trading up to go get Terrion Arnold, locking down, having a CB1 on this team, to pair up with Brian Branch, and breathe some life into a struggle bus of a secondary, to be honest, that still lost talent from last year, because Cam Sutton got into the trouble that he got into, with C.J. Gardner-Johnson left town the way he leaves every town. But they really needed a corner or an edge rusher to really help this defense out a great deal. They followed that up on day two by taking another corner, and one that in some people's eyes was a late first round option at the position, had more corners gone in the first round. There were only three. In Ennis Rakestraw Jr. out of Missouri. So you got two corners now with Brian Branch. Safeties you're fine at. Got no issue back there. And I really like both of those picks, and both those guys will contribute early, and both of them, I'm pretty confident, will be good. Big corners, one guy that can lock everybody down, defensive player of the year type potential, and Arnold. Rakestraw just a solid contributor. Then you get into everything else. And on their own, I don't hate the picks. You only got six. There's only so much you can do. Didn't move around after taking Arnold, I don't think. Giovanni Manu from Canada, offensive tackle, okay, fine. You got to get some depth. Sione Vaki, safety out of Utah, not bad. Do need some help in the defensive backfield. You might have some turnover down there later. Also, special teams, got to have dudes that'll go out there. Mekhi Wingo, don't hate it. Need help on the interior defensive line. Christian Mahogany, Boston College guard. We're in the sixth round anymore. You can't really analyze draft picks at this point. However, you had six picks and did not take an edge rusher, and that's what's got me concerned with the Detroit Lions draft, because you look on the other side of Aiden Hutchinson, and dog, there's just nobody there. And, you know, I don't have any wood to knock on, so forgive me here. But if anything were to happen to 97, you have no pass rush on this team. I don't care how much you like Houston or any of the other guys on this team. you have no pass rush without Aiden Hutchinson, and it's hard for him to have a significant impact the likes of TJ Watts and Miles Garrett and Micah Parsons and those kind of guys. Because you look at all three of those guys, the elite of the elite edge rushers, they all have a running mate. They all have somebody else on the other side. Now, obviously, Aiden is a fantastic player, still had, I think, 12 sacks last year, even without the help. But if you want him to hit that next level and to really be a problem, he needs a running back, a running mate. So I was a little bit disappointed in that aspect, but otherwise, very solid draft. TJ, what's your take on Detroit in Detroit with their selections?
I think they did a great job of picking guys that fit their like identity as a team and how hard they work and like that grit factor that like not necessarily underdog, but kind of like that forgotten team that most people aren't looking to be great until the last year. So I think that part is very important when you're drafting is to get guys that fit the mold of your team and the identity, because egos are a hard thing to balance when you're coaching a team. So to have guys that already know the culture and like that culture and fit that culture makes it easier. I think they did right by going on the defensive side of things, but I do agree that they needed to get edge. I said that last week heading into the draft. I was like, they need to be drafting some edge guys. Like, I like the Terron Arnold – or, excuse me, the Terron Arnold pick, but you still need help down low. Like, if you can't get pressure on the quarterback – it doesn't matter how good your secondary is. Guys are going to get open when a quarterback has 6 seconds to sit there.
So looking around the rest of the NFC North really quick, the Bears only had 4 or 5 picks, and one of them was a punter. We know what happened day one. They're all in on Caleb Williams and Roman Dunes, Adunze, being the future of that program. They didn't really need much else anyway. They're not an awful team. They just got to get over 500. Minnesota gets their quarterback with J.J. McCarthy, gets an edge guy with Dallas Turner out of Alabama. That's a smart decision. And then they follow that up with Kyrie Jackson, cornerback out of Oregon in the fourth round, which is mind-boggling to me a little bit. Kyrie Jackson is a fantastic player. Walter Rouse is a great guy to develop on the offensive line. Will Reichard, kicker out of Alabama, and then we're talking seventh-round picks. We're not going to do that. Minnesota's strong draft, Green Bay, a ton of picks. Your Packers really had a haul. And I got to say, I know you want skilled players early. I know they didn't take a wide receiver, but you've got about 6 guys that are 2 years or less into this league, and Christian Watson can play when he's healthy. But you look down this, Jordan Morgan out of Arizona, first round. Edgerrin Cooper as a linebacker. Javon Bullard out of Georgia. Marshawn Lloyd as a running back out of USC. Tyron Hopper out of Missouri, linebacker. Jacob Monk, Duke center. You got some dudes here, and even got Michael Pratt, a second round type quarterback in the 7th round to develop. Kalen King was a guy who had a lot of talent, but just fell off late in the process. You got him right at the end of the draft. I mean, I feel like the Packers got significantly better in this draft. I thought they had a pretty strong draft overall.
I would have liked us to get an edge rusher with us going so heavily on the defensive end. Picking up 2 safeties, that's a stretch in my opinion. We already have pretty decent safety play as is. We could have used another, but picking up 2, it's a stretch. Picking up multiple cornerbacks, in my opinion, was a stretch. We have Eric Stokes. We still have Jaire Alexander. We still have...
still is a heavy modifier on Jaire Alexander.
He's there.
For now. It might only last 8 weeks.
I know. Who's the guy that filled in last year? It's right on the tip of my tongue. That makes me upset. When Rasul Douglas left. Which I can't believe they let him go. That was an absolute trash.
They thought they were going to be a lot worse. Anyway. When they did that. Just, I'm surprised they didn't take a corner earlier.
Yeah,
but I'm surprised that...
I like the Kalen King pick. I think guys who end up falling like that, especially at the corner position, tend to have that grind to bring things out and really end up being a great player. But yeah, my biggest thing is I just wish we would have taken a edge rusher. Yeah. I think like we're like okay on the offensive side. Like this draft... if you weren't like super high, you weren't getting an offensive skill player that was going to make a difference. So I'm kind of okay passing up. But like, I think kind of
the next couple of years, we got to be looking to go skill players pretty high. Because we have some guys, but like we need the guy. Or
I would love for the Packers to go out and get T. Higgins.
I think he would bring a true number one option to the team.
Yeah.
As a guy who can get open on all three levels and will catch the ball, has speed, can break tackles, and he's out there for a decent price. He doesn't want to play.
Price.
It's a decent price for us. The Packers got money.
And well, I meant so, as far as draft picks and capital to trade for him.
That's fine. Go do all of that. Whatever you got to do. I think he's the kind of guy who he reminds me a lot of like a Donald Driver.
Yeah.
Like he's the kind of guy that fits the system and would be great for Jordan Love.
So let's transition to the Michigan Wolverines and the selections. 13 Michigan Wolverines went in the NFL draft. They had 18 eligible. Didn't quite get to that record in 2022 by Georgia. 15, though, man, were there some stretches where it was the only thing that could come off the board was a Wolverine. We already know about J.J. McCarthy. We don't really need to analyze that anymore with the Vikings. We'll be talking about him plenty for hopefully the next 10 years. The Bengals got the next one at 49 with Chris Jenkins on the defensive line. Commanders at 50. See, we're back-to-back already. Mike Sanders still. Junior Colson is the first Charger taken by Jim Harbaugh and the Los Angeles Charger. Excuse me, the first Wolverine taken by Harbaugh. Corum goes at 83 to the Rams. Roman Wilson goes at 84 to the Steelers. Zach Zinter went way earlier than expected. 85 to the Browns. Scoot down a little bit more, and A.J. Barner, the tight end, goes to Seattle. Trevor Keegan to the Eagles. Michael Barrett to the Panthers. And then you got another run on them. Ladarius Henderson at 249 to the Texans. Jalen Harrell to the Titans at 252. And Cornelius Johnson at 253 again to the Chargers. Now, those guys down in the 200s, you know, they got to make the team and all that sort of stuff. But everybody from Keegan up to Jenkins, they're all guys that can contribute as early as this year, with the exception of Zach Zinter because of his injury. Though I love the landing spot as much as I don't like the Browns. He fits in really, really well there. But favorite landing spot, least favorite landing spot, whatever you want to go with that one, that's where we'll go.
Least favorite landing spot for me is Blake Corum. I feel like there were a few other teams who needed a running back, and he would have been a great option for them.
I thought he was going to be a Charger.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. I feel like that was a dropped ball there because I feel like he's a lot like Austin Ekeler, but just not as big as he was, and he would have fit right back into that system, or they could have adopted a new system, and he would have been fine in that. But also, I really love Trevor Keegan to the Eagles. That is, he fits in perfectly.
Yes, he's like an Eagle, especially the guys they've been drafting over the years.
With Kelce going out, he's like the perfect plug piece. He like takes over that whole identity that Kelce had. Not necessarily like the hero part and like all of that quite yet to the city of Philadelphia, but just the wild big guy who's just down for anything. I love that coming in just like that.
I love that the Eagles have three cornbread dudes in the middle of their offensive line. They got the dude out of Nebraska. They've got Dickerson from Alabama, and now they've got Keegan. You don't have to look far to know which one's my favorite. Roman Wilson to the Steelers. I am so hyped about Wilson joining that offense. But I'll say Junior Colson's a guy. I don't understand why off-ball linebackers don't get any love anymore. But going 69 to the Chargers, landing back with Harbaugh, I think that's a huge deal, and I think he'll be a solid player for him. Mike Sanders still landing in Washington. Hopefully he helps that thing turn around as well, because he is a fantastic player. If he was 2 inches taller, he'd have been first rounder. That's all the time we got for that. We are going to continue to talk about the Wolverines, just more of a who plays for them now kind of situation next here on Midden Madness 95.3
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Midden Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Back
here on Mid Madness 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. Let's talk some Wolverines and the 2024 college football season. So we'll also touch a little bit on draft projections. The biggest reason we're talking about this today is because the transfer portal recently closed. Now, that doesn't mean guys can't still announce that they're entering the portal, but everybody that was in the portal before midnight of April 30th, or 11:59 April 30th, I don't know, those guys can still land with a team and play for that team this year, this upcoming season. Everybody else, no. That means that we know that there are no options to come in and compete with Alex Orji for the starting quarterback position outside of Jaden Davis, his four-star freshman coming in, and everybody else that is on the roster at the current time. When you're talking about Jaden Denegal or Jack Tuttle, really, those are the only two options. And I don't see anybody getting past Orji on this offense, but we were also talking before we started, you know, hit the record button, about how this team is just going to run the ball anyway. So the big concern with Orji is that you haven't really seen him throw the ball that much, and all of his receivers are gone, right? All of those receivers are in the NFL, or they just weren't experienced or a big factor in last year's offense. Though he will have Max Bredesen as fantastic tight end to throw to. Wait, no, Colson Loveland. Excuse me. Read the wrong name. He'll have Colson Loveland, one of the best tight ends in the country to throw to. All that to be said, defense is going to be fantastic, and big reason for that is the number of those guys that are being projected to be first-round picks in the NFL draft next year. I believe four of them landed on Jordan Reed's way too early 2025 mock draft. First up was, of course, Will Johnson, who was the seventh overall pick in that, and then Mason Graham, the Rose Bowl defensive player of the game, landed with the Minnesota Vikings at 8 in that exercise as well. So this is another kind of heavy turnover year for college football. A lot of the big stars are gone. A lot of the guys that you know about don't play for particularly fantastic teams, Colorado. So
chill.
I'm just saying, been a wild couple of days for the Buffs.
Chill.
On top of all of that, you've also got the conference realignments and everything else that's going on. So just kind of that quick glance that we're giving at the roster there, DJ. I mean, you're the Michigan fan in the room. I'm pretty unbiased on all this. I'm excited to see Orji play football. His athleticism is very, very enticing, but he seems very similar to a Jalen Milroe guy, where he's going to frustrate the hell out of you when he throws the ball. But when he's making plays, he can ball.
I just hope he can throw the ball. We haven't seen it before. So as long as he can throw the ball, I'm happy with what he's going to be able to come out and do. I just hope that we find a way to use some of the other athletes we have, even if we kind of start to use some two quarterback sets and maybe do some handoffs or some pitches, some jet sweeps with, Jaden Denegal or some of the other athletes we have on the field and on the bench. I think Michigan has a lot of talent, and just like every other football team, some of it kind of just sits there. Mm. And I think there's some wrinkles that could really be thrown in with a lot of the talent and really make defenses think. Because, I mean, yeah, Michigan's known for just running the ball and kind of forcing you to stop it. But if you can also throw some creative wrinkles in that and really make defenses think, this team could go to the next level. So I'm kind of more worried about where the offense is going to go in terms. That's kind of where all the question marks are. But the bigger piece here for me is that the defense is absolutely loaded, and that's where the heart of the team is. So as long as the defense is able to continue playing the way they have been for the last 3-4 years now, I only see a couple tough games in the schedule. So I'm a very happy Wolverine fan.
Yeah, you read off the schedule earlier. I don't know. It seems like a pretty easy schedule. I mean, you do have Texas, Ohio State, and Oregon, as if those aren't three teams that could very well be three of the four teams in the college football playoff next year. Michigan themselves as well, by the way, not to discredit them. I think the biggest thing, though, even with Orji and all the questions that surround him, told you earlier, I don't think he'd be at Michigan if he couldn't throw the ball. Yeah, I think last year was circumstantial. I mean, folks who watched the spring game, that's a spring game. I hate to be that guy. I've watched many a dudes ball out in person for the Alabama Crimson Tide at a spring game and never amount to anything. It's spring games are spring games. They're practice. There's some stuff you can read into, but how good your quarterback is ain't one of them. That being said, you go throughout the history of Jim Harbaugh as a coach. He knows how to take care of his quarterbacks and put them in positions to succeed. A lot of people are questioning his ability to do that right now with the situation in LA. Justin Herbert, they're silly. They haven't been paying attention. Harbaugh knows what he's doing. So to bring Orgy in, this dude can do what's asked of him. And it's going to be a lot easier leaning on Donovan Edwards, especially early on in the season. And really and truly, Michigan is still a very strong team. A lot of turnover at wide receiver and on the offensive line. Yeah, sure. But a lot of core pieces, especially on defense return. You've got excellent playmakers on the offense. It really shouldn't be that much to worry about when it comes to, I don't know, aspirations, I guess, as far as looking on that schedule and seeing those three big games. That doesn't, you know, just because Michigan had more turnover than, you know, a team like Oregon, or not Oregon, that's the wrong one, because Oregon had a lot of players taken in this draft, than a team like Texas, who just lost a couple of big playmakers and not much else.
Ohio State, too. They didn't really lose anybody, but
they are
Cade Stover and Marvin Harrison Jr.
They are going to have a new quarterback,
and
though.
There was a couple of transfer outs, but... Yeah, I mean,
they've had a lot of transfer.
They're kind of in the same position as us with slightly less turnover.
Yeah. So, I mean, but a lot of teams are going through the same thing is kind of my point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, you know, you can compare yourself to other teams and you'll find that it's really not that crazy because so many teams have heavy turnover this year. Two of the three teams we just mentioned, the biggest teams on the schedule, all are going to have new quarterbacks. A lot of teams around the league are going to have new quarterbacks. And a lot of the quarterbacks that are there right now aren't very proven, which means you've kind of got an avenue. You know, there's going to be somebody is going to, you know, step in and light it up. And Quinn Ewers is going to stand there in Texas and just kind of grin because he's the most talented passer pound for pound that we've seen in college football. And then you got Carson Beck out in Georgia. He's pretty good too. Everybody else kind of a toss up in the air. So that gives you an avenue to great success. I don't think Michigan's going to be ranked number one in the first AP poll. Don't get me wrong. I think that's going to be Georgia, but I don't think you're going to be worried about them not being in the top five or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should be two since we're not going to be one. But
out of Texas, Texas.
There's a lot of teams that are still competing. Michigan's just going to have to prove it. I think after a win over Texas in the Big House, things shift for them. And then they're...
I'll tell you as an Alabama fan, don't underestimate Texas.
I do not underestimate Texas, but with five straight home games to open up the season... That's putting Michigan
in. That should be illegal.
That's putting Michigan in a great spot.
You said that so casually. That should be illegal.
And then they had two road games against Washington and Illinois. They played two more home games in Michigan State, Oregon, both at the Big House. Indiana on the road, Northwestern at the Big House, Ohio State in the Horseshoe. So, like, they're in a great spot to have a very good season. Like,
that
Texas game says a lot. You lose that game at home, things get rough. You win that game, you're rolling.
If you're going to start the season with five straight home games, that back half of the schedule is going to be a little rough because you got to go to the Horseshoe this year. You go play all those other games on the road too. So I don't know.
But you know what? I think it helps that you only have one rivalry game on the road.
True.
The only real rivalry game you have on the road is Ohio State. You can say Washington, but Washington's got a lot of turnover.
Dude, they're bringing back two starters.
And a different coaching staff.
Completely. Hold on. For people that don't know, the Washington Huskies, who played the Michigan Wolverines in the college football playoffs last year, might not be right. They're returning two starters. Least in the FBS. That's bizarre. Good luck in the Big Ten, Huskies. Oregon's ready to come in. USC's ready to come in. I think UCLA's got some work to do, but oh boy, Washington doesn't look as good as they did about 6 months ago.
Nowhere near.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, it's time for our picks, and we've got a little shakeup. Because, boy, I did awful last week. That and more here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
All right, we're back here on Mid Madness, 95.3 WBCK. Time for our picks.
And there's a
shakeup in the standings, DJ.
After last week, you managed to lose both of our split games. Ouch. And we both won a couple games. So we both lost a couple games. So that puts you at 2-4 on the week, puts me at 4-2, which leaves me at a solid 39-27 coming into the week, and you are just two games back at 37-29.
Boy, I'd have looked brilliant had I taken that Lakers game. It's a shame. All right, I'll get us started off here with some hockey and a game seven in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. This one is going to be later tonight as you're listening on ABC and ESPN Plus at 8 p.m. The Boston Bruins hosting the Toronto Maple Leafs in game seven. And the Leafs coming back on this one. They were down 3-1. They've won the past two. However, they are playing potentially, I think it's kind of up in the air, but potentially playing without one of their best players, Austin Matthews. So it's kind of surprising that they're able to make this comeback despite that. But nonetheless, the Leafs are on a run. Can they finish it out and upset the Bruins in the first round?
The interesting thing about this is they have the exact same record for home and away. Boston is 24-11-6 at home, and that is what Toronto's away record is, which is really interesting to run into at this time of the year. But home games and game seven in the playoffs are simply just different. And when you're playing an original six team, as an original six team, you know how that goes. I think the Bruins close it out at the TD Garden.
Yeah, props to the Leafs for coming back in this series, forcing a game seven. I think it's all over, though. I think Boston, like you said, when you're at home, man, it's different. So I'm going to stick with Boston as well.
I will stay inside the arenas and head on over to another sport that is in the playoffs. There is an NBA game taking place. I believe it is game one of this series. Yes, mm-hmm. Game one, Western Conference semifinals, Nuggets hosting the Timberwolves. Timberwolves absolutely been blazing the last couple of weeks, led by young star Anthony Edwards, 26 points a game. They got Rudy Gobert bringing in 13 rebounds. Jokic obviously dominating things for the Nuggets, leading them in points with 26, rebounds with 12, and assists with 9. Does he continue to dominate and win with a 61% chance of taking game one? Or does Ant and the Young Wolves come in and shake things up?
Well, that's where I was kind of going to go with this, is that Ant really went off in that last game to close out the Suns. But both these teams won in five games, which I think is a little bit surprising, because both these teams significantly better than the teams they beat. Timberwolves way better than the Suns. Nuggets way better than the Lakers. Yet it did take five games both times. Not that that's such a, you know, awful thing. It's not like they went to seven. Both these teams, very, very strong, but I think the Nuggets will advance in this series, so I'm going to stick with them having that first win at home over the Timberwolves, that playoff experience kind of being the X factor in this one.
Yeah, I didn't tell you before, but the Nuggets are 33-8 at home, and I think that trend of winning a lot of games and losing very few continues in the playoffs. So I have them at least taking game one in Ball Arena.
That brings it back over to me, and I'll, you know what, let's talk some football real quick. The UFL is in week six, and I've got the San Antonio Brahmas as a 1-point favorite over the DC Defenders on Sunday at 3 p.m. The Defenders are at home. Both these teams kind of struggling a little bit, or excuse me, not both these teams. The DC Defenders, one of those few teams that is kind of like in the middle, like pushing 500, because you're either really good in this league or you're really bad. DC Defenders, one of the few teams kind of in the middle. San Antonio Brahmas looking to kind of take some leeway in the XFL, try to keep pace with the Battlehawks, who are a double-digit favorite this week and have been rolling as of late. Defenders, harsh team on defense, but they can keep up on offense. Brahmas have a very strong offense themselves. DJ, who you got in this one?
It's hard to beat a team twice in a season, but the Brahmas have been absolutely rolling. They do only have one loss, and I believe that one loss is to the Stallions, who are the only undefeated team in the UFL, so that's a big deal. And I think that they continue that trend of being really good and continuing to separate themselves from other teams in the league. Like you mentioned, it's kind of a split and split where there's good teams and bad teams. And I think the Brahmas reiterate that they're on the good side of things.
Yeah, I will stick with the Brahmas as well. I think this is where the Brahmas and the Battlehawks, the Stallions, and potentially the Panthers can all separate themselves, solidify themselves as playoff teams with just a handful of weeks left to go in the regular season. Brahmas over the Defenders.
So I'm going to stay in the football realm as well, heading to my own UFL game. The Panthers here in Michigan will be back in Ford Field.
Wow.
I don't know what just happened.
Woof.
But yeah, back in Ford Field, yeah, taking on the only winless team in the UFL, the Renegades, who I would imagine are going to be hungry. But the interesting part about this game is the Panthers are probably going to be asking for some help here around the league. They would love to see the Roughnecks upset the Battlehawks, and they would probably love to see the Defenders beat the Brahmas, because with a win over the Renegades, that puts, and those two losses, the Battlehawks, Brahmas, and Panthers are all 4-2. So I think they're going to be asking for some help. But do you think the Panthers have enough here in this first game, the one that they have to win their own, in order to make some things shake around the league?
Well, I'll say this. I don't think the Panthers want the Roughnecks to win anything. They want to keep that space. Remember, USFL, XFL, all those other teams you mentioned that could be 4-2, they're all in the other conference. So Panthers don't need any competition getting into the playoffs. But that said, I am so out on the Renegades. Got, they're awful. I don't know how the Panthers are only 3.5-point favorites. Give me the Panthers and the spread, because, oh boy, the Renegades can't do anything right.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to have multiple good football teams here in Michigan again.
Right.
It's been a very long time. I don't even think I was born the last time that happened. So to be alive and witnessing this is awesome. So I think the Panthers continue to be that tough grinding team that beats the teams they should beat and is looking to get a few from those teams that they're competing against, the ones that are a little bit tougher and more toward their skill level. So I got the Panthers as well.
All right, we are going to pick a baseball series for the middle of next week, or really start of it. Monday through Wednesday, the Tigers will be in Cleveland to take on the first place of the AL Central, Cleveland Guardians. That first game will be at 6:10 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. That'll be Flaherty versus McKenzie on the mound. Game 2, also at 6:10 on Tuesday, Maeda and Allen on the mound. And then that Game 3 is on Wednesday at 1:10 p.m. in the afternoon, Olsen versus Bibby. Again, Cleveland has a 2-game lead on the Tigers in the division. Of course, both these teams will play a series in between us picking this and them actually playing. But perfect opportunity for the Detroit Tigers to get some headway towards first place in the AL Central.
Yeah, this one is a tough one for me because I really like the way the Tigers have been playing and the pitching continues to get better. Need the bats to wake up, and a tough team to try and do that against is the Guardians, because they also have very good pitching.
One of the best pitching teams in the league.
Yeah, so it's extremely hard to get your bats going against a team like this. But the Tigers have been playing much better on the road than they have been at home, which is really weird. To be 10-4 on the road means that they are 8-9 at home.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to be able to steal one. But I think the series goes to the Guardians in a 2-1 split. And the Tigers are going to be looking to maybe sweep them when they come up to Comerica Park.
I disagree. I think this might be the only time that we're going to be split, this week. So maybe I'll get one game back on you. Hopefully.
Or get one game worse.
Or I'll get one game worse, if you want to look at it that way. I think the Tigers get the first two and lose the last one. I think that trend with Olsen, unfortunately, will continue. But Flaherty is a dude. I think they'll ride some momentum off of the New York games against the Yankees. I'm not saying they're going to win that series. Don't get me wrong. Not that even beating Cleveland is too far of a stretch from saying the same thing about the Yankees. But I think they've got a chance to have some momentum flowing, especially coming off all of these series wins anyway. So I'll take the Tigers to win the series, most likely the first two games, and then losing the last one. Not that that matters.
Wow. Do your thing, dog. We got one more event to touch on. We're going to be at the Farmacia Arena in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, as Alexandre Pantoa will be defending his flyweight title against Steve Urseg. Pantoa is 27-5, Urseg 12-1. Urseg has a 3-inch height advantage at 5'8". He's got a 1-pound weight advantage at 126. He's 6 years younger than Pantoa. He's got a half-inch reach advantage. His significant strike percentage is 2% lower than Pantoa's, and his takedown accuracy is a whopping 18% lower than Pantoa. This is going to be an interesting fight. They're both orthodox standing fighters. Do you think Pantoa retains his belt with all the experience he has, or does the young guy who's coming in with energy, ready to go, take it away from him?
And not just the young guy coming in looking to dethrone the old dog, but the old dog in his yard. There's a Brazilian on every fight on this card, and Pantoa is going to have the whole arena behind him. So it's Steve Urseg versus the world, not just Pantoa. I'm not saying that's impossible for him to overcome. 28, it's not like he's 21 years old or anything like that. So, that said, I think the experience and the hometown advantage is what's going to kind of propel Pantoa. I don't anticipate that very many Brazilians are going to lose this fight, lose their fights, I should say, later tonight.
Yeah, it's tough to come into a guy's backyard literally and win a fight. I think it's going to be a hard fought fight. Them both being orthodox and so similar in the reach, when they're standing up, it's going to be some blows and they're going to be nice. And it's going to be a great time, but I think this one may be one on the ground. And when it comes to groundwork, it's about conditioning and it's about experience. Pantoa is going to have that edge on Urseg in that realm. But it could come down to anything. I just trust experience a little more in championship fights that could possibly go five rounds rather than a guy who's only 13 fights in. So, yeah, that leaves us with, like you said, only one game splitting us. We're the same on the Bruins over the Leafs, the Nuggets over the T-Wolves, the Panthers over the Renegades, Brahmas over the Defenders, Pantoa over Urseg, and I'm taking the Guardians to win the series while you've got the hometown Tigers. Get us out of here for the weekend.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on Mitten Madness. I don't think we have anything coming up for any particular reason, so just hang out with us next week at 10 a.m. on a Saturday here on 95.3 WBCK. I'm Jacob Harrison, and that's Dejon Hughes. We'll see you next week.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to play it back? Stream Mitten Madness live or on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app.